What's up? This is PR, and you're now listening to Respect the Game, the Slam podcast on Winner's Circle Media.
Good world, it's your boy Pete Walsh. My levels are decent at best, aka Jim Dolan's kazoo solo. I'm back again, episode 7, I think, maybe 8, based on the conversation we just had off air, but likely our last.
Hopefully not.
Nah.
These dudes in here got me pissed off right now.
Nah.
What? I'm here with Abe Schwadron.
Good start.
Yo. It's just because of that, I'm not even going to give you an AKA.
Good. I'm also here with Adam Figman.
No AKA. Real name, no gimmicks. Word to Obi Trice.
Already mad?
Dude. I'm on no sleep. I sent out an email. What do you guys want to talk about today? I get no response.
Dude, we've been talking for 45 seconds and we already have an Obi Trice reference. So, like, we're off to a decent start.
Yeah, I mean, my mood is swinging based on the Obi Trice reference. So, I cannot wait to go home and listen to his album when I get home.
Personally, I was too busy.
Second just, round's on me.
I was too busy just getting overly hype about the return of Michael Beasley to the NBA.
Ooh.
I can only imagine how you were celebrating that.
It's gotta legally.
Only one way.
All right. Well, I wanted to start with the Miami Heat and or Portland Trailblazers, but Abe apparently wants to start with Michael Beasley.
I mean, we don't have to go any further than
smoking
that. I just wanted to mention that I'm excited. That's it.
Speak on your excitement.
Yo, quick fact, actually. Do you know Michael Beasley has played more NBA games than Derrick Rose?
That's really depressing.
I didn't fact check that.
Are you sure? I think that was. I remember that stat too, but not, that definitely doesn't incorporate this season. It might be over.
Should I Google it or should we just proceed with the show?
Nah, we're rolling with it, man.
This show does not allow Googles.
Whatever. I'm happy to have him back. I think it's cool. I wasn't really here for, in quotes, all the Michael Beasley jokes on Twitter about the Rockets.
Where were you?
Not there for them. I don't know. Shouts to Bees. I'm just happy that he's back.
Good
I like
for
this.
The Rockets for having like one fun thing about them now.
Super cool Bees.
Yeah, they had nothing.
Just everyone's on the
as far as fun goes.
Best way to solve chemistry is sign this knucklehead. Man, shut up,
dude. They have Dwight Howard, James Harden, Josh. Brown. I don't think Michael Beasley is going to cause any more issues than they already have.
Let the man live. Right, yeah. Can he come back and play in the NBA, please?
All right,
MVP of China, son.
Wait till he gets it. There's going to be one playoff game that he just cooks whoever they go.
Bang on someone.
All right, best return from China of all time, J.R. Smith, hands down.
Yo, there's a great 30 for 30 somewhere about that trip, J.R. Smith in China.
Oh, dude, with his sister choking people out in the crowd?
Like, we need that 30 for 30.
Wow. I think we may have just barked.
Or like an 8,000 word oral history about that trip. That's 2 weeks.
All right. Anyway, to really start, tonight we got Shea Cotton on the podcast.
Yes.
L.A. legend.
Yeah.
Dubbed the man child by Sports Illustrated when he was, I believe, 15, 16.
Really. He was 6'4", like eighth grade, dunking on people.
Yeah, coming out with the man child documentary. It's got Paul Pierce, Casey Jacobson, Elton Brand, Randy Moss, Baron Davis, all types of everyone. Basically, everybody was big on the LA scene and the AAU circuit in the mid to late 90s. We spoke to him.
They all co-sign him as being like the real deal. Yeah.
Probably one of the best dunkers I've seen based on the footage.
Definitely the best high school highlight reel, maybe ever.
Yeah. Like basically what Andrew Wiggins did to the internet a few years ago, he was doing on VHS tapes getting passed around.
In eighth grade.
Yeah. In eighth grade.
It's kind of like that Shabazz Muhammad hoop mixtape that I watched on loop like 100,000 times in the Slam office as an intern, but like he was actually also good at basketball, and Shabazz was just like, dunk, dunk, dunk. Sorry.
All right, so we'll talk to Shea later. He gave us a really good interview. We're very happy to have him. He was open, honest. That's
movie's
what we
coming
asked
out.
For. The movie is coming out at a to-be-determined date, but the trailer is online now. Manchilddoc.com. I'm going to double check that before because I want to get that right. But anyway, Adam Figman and I took in the Blazers Knicks game.
We did.
On Tuesday evening. Yes. And, you know, the Blazers are probably the hottest team, excluding the Warriors, in the league right now. They were a lot of fun to watch. CJ McCollum and Dame Lillard, of course, are really fun. But just seeing them in person, you realize how well-coached they are. I just want to give a lot of props to Terry Stotts and Neil Olshey for organizing and orchestrating that roster. And, you know, I think they're a dangerous team heading down the stretch. I mean, I don't know if anybody's going to beat the Warriors, but I think they can make a little bit of noise. What do you guys think?
I think that they can't really make noise in the playoffs, but I think that if I was a good Western Conference team, I would not want to play them. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not betting on them winning a round in the playoffs just because that means they're almost definitely going against Warriors, Spurs, or Thunder. But you do not want to play this team. They're just explosive. They score in bunches. They're hard. They're basically impossible to defend. Like, if you're a team like the Spurs and your point guard is, and you have that, like, that Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili lineup potentially down the
stretch.
Possibly
Andre Miller as well.
Yeah. They can score in bunches, and anything can happen when you have a duo that can score like that. I mean, they're pretty weak up front just compared to their, Western Conference competition. But
isn't it crazy? Yeah. Like, they were basically trying to be bad, and those two guards are so good, basically, that they've made them better than teams like the Rockets, who a lot of people thought were going to be, could possibly finish as first in the West.
Yeah, it's basically that Damian Lillard is so good that he's on the level of point guard where his teammates don't have to be good for him to be good, which is not every point guard, right?
Right.
A lot of point guards rely on their teammates. He's so good that he doesn't need good point guards or good surround, amazing teammates. And CJ is just really, really, really good now.
So we're not putting any stock into the fact that they cracked the Warriors by 30.
I mean
it's one game.
It's a good sign, and it just proves my point that, like, I wouldn't want to play them. They're explosive. They're capable of anything. Am I going to sit here and say I got $50 on the Blazers in the first round right now? No, but I mean, if we're getting an upset, it's you don't want to mess with them. Like, they have this firepower.
I would like to point out also, speaking of Damian Lillard, so we ranked him number 16 in the Slam Top 50 this year, and he was by far the most mentioned player leading up to his ranking, and then when we finally put out his ranking at 16, by far took the most shit of any player on the whole list as far as being too highly regarded on our list. Mm-hmm. And now look, he might be, as of today, he's probably he's playing, maybe there's maybe nobody besides Steph is playing better basketball like this exact moment
second,
in time.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Abe, I give you a lot of props because when you did the story on him last year, you actually said that he should be in the MVP consideration. And
Abe will write anything, though.
Oh, come on, man.
I did text him.
I'll write anything if no one reads it, I guess.
I did text him and ask him if he was off the shits by saying that. But no, you're right. I know I came out and we were doing our podcast on a different network and predicted that they were going to have a really long, really bad season. So, I'm happy for them, happy they're succeeding. I'm just looking at their schedule now coming up. Tomorrow they play the Raptors. Then they play the Pistons, who are going to be on a back-to-back. Then they play the Wizards, and then they play the Warriors. So they got a pretty tough stretch coming up.
Just while we're on the Warriors tip, while we're on the Blazers tip, Abe spoke about the Dame Lillard thing, and I think at this point it's just the Blazers are the Damian Lillard / CJ McCollum story, and we just got to give a big Lehigh University shout out to CJ McCollum. I go back to I attended the Lehigh University, and when I'm back at school or talking to alum or whatever, the first question they ask is about CJ, and just he's the first conversation topic: how well he's playing, how much he's putting on for the school, and all that. So. It's just kind of cool to have watched him become what he is now, which is crazy. I mean, I knew he was going to be pretty good.
Right.
Not like this.
Yeah, but
he's great. This quick.
He has, for me, the funniest, photos from college where you just look and you're like, nah, it's not even the same guy. Like, so tiny and skinny
he was
frail.
Super skinny, and he had a baby face, which he still kind of does, but he really didn't when we were in college. I was a senior, and he was a freshman, and it was the conversation around campus was we actually have a good basketball player now. We have someone that could maybe one day possibly be a second round pick in the NBA. It was it could have
a lottery pick. He cooked Duke.
He cooked Austin Rivers.
What was that, 2011?
That was his
2012.
It was his junior year.
Yeah. So shout out to CJ.
But just the physical development thing though is
Oh, he's something
he got
that
so much bigger.
I always love seeing in NBA players is like 3 years into the league, like, oh yeah, like you realize that being in the NBA is a job, and part of that job is being in the weight room every single day, multiple times a day, and then holy shit, look at how jacked this dude is now. Yeah.
Which is smart because he's 6'3" guarding shooting guards. Like he needs to be as big as possible, and he's a remarkably different body than he did at
totally different
at 19.
And you realize, yeah, exactly. Like these kids are so young. Like it's funny that we have Shea Cotton on and later in the podcast because he was so different. Like he was so physically gifted, well ahead of being anywhere near a professional basketball team. You know, special guys like LeBron have that too. But then you look at guys like CJ and Durant, Anthony Davis, these guys that just totally transform their body.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Anthony Davis is a good one.
Yeah, and the last point I'm going to make on CJ is he was a journalism major and has shown a vested interest in continuing that even throughout his career.
Lehigh University journalism program produced two very fine basketball-related individuals.
Who?
CJ McCollum and myself. Come on, man. I can't believe I got a who there.
Pete looked at Adam like really genuinely. He's like, who?
He's like excited to hear the answer.
He's like, thought it was some weird joke.
I thought it was like Jack McCallum went there or something.
No, I think he's Muhlenberg or another local school. Yeah. Nope.
All right.
Just us
so,
two.
Just us.
We're recording this on a Wednesday. We'll go up on a Thursday and. Tonight is the rematch between the Warriors and the Thunder. Last Saturday night, they played probably definitely the best game of the season thus far and one of the better regular season games I can remember. It was crazy. I don't even know what better way to describe it. I think Mike Breen's call at the end summed it up perfectly with the two bangs after he made the game-winning three-pointer. We don't need to get, like, two inside baseball on it because it's been broken down and devoured. But Figman, I just want to ask you, what was better, watching that or attending the Future concert in New York afterwards?
Well, the Future concert lasted about the length of the first overtime.
Adam really overtime. Out in these streets. I love it.
I know.
It was the Future
it's
after
quite
party.
The night
there was
combo.
Future performed twice in New York City that night, so I got the latter show, which I think was also the shorter show. But I did get to see the entirety of the Thunder Warriors game in a bar beforehand.
Well, in fairness, going to a Future show is like one of the only ways to blow off the proper amount of steam after watching that basketball game. Like yeah. I was
talk
in
about
my apartment just like shaking, basically.
Talk about like a greatness overdose, though.
Yeah, I mean, we're just
up
walking
Sunday,
in there.
I woke
like...
up Sunday like dehydrated. I needed to get my amino acids up. I need like 48 hours of not leaving my apartment.
Did
after
you
that.
Just walk into, was that what, stage 48 or whatever
yeah,
the place called? Did you just walk
yeah.
in there like eyes wide open, just adrenaline pumping?
Yeah, but I walked in at the same time like as like 8,000 other people trying to get through one skinny door.
All
so.
Who just watched the Warriors game.
It's not exactly a moment of relaxation. But that game was nuts. And you're right, I was like on a high and I woke up, Sunday morning and... Besides having Future songs stuck in my head, I was like, I had to, you know, go on YouTube and just like kind of confirm that it happened.
Yeah, that's the first game I think I've watched that many replays on.
I needed to like
since,
just
like, the Giants
keep
with the Super
seeing
Bowl in 2011. Yeah,
yeah,
it's just I texted my father. I was because he was watching. He doesn't watch too many NBA games, but he's all about Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's one of the best sports-related things I've ever seen.
Crazy.
Live.
Just that last play, the way everything unfolded perfectly. You couldn't write that.
Yeah, and I mean...
All right, you could write that, but you couldn't script, you know, it's just perfect.
Yeah, he's in his 60s, and he's like, I agree completely. So that's just the magnitude of what we're
well,
seeing.
The crazy part is that last shot obviously is like the moment from that game, but that entire game was absurd. Kevin Durant hit a ridiculous three-pointer that should have been the game-winning shot of that game.
Yeah.
In regulation.
Steph hurt his ankle.
I know.
That's so terrifying.
It looked like he got run over by a truck.
I was like, this whole thing is over. Everything is over. I got
actually,
flashbacks
yeah,
of 2012.
You know what?
Dude, like, I blacked out for 35 seconds.
So Adam actually texted both Pete and I saying, didn't you say they should just keep Steph out for the rest of the whole game?
Like, yeah, I was like, what's season? The point? It's the regular season. Like, he just hurt his ankle. He has a history of horrible ankle injuries. What
for
are
the
they
record,
risking?
Dog.
And it's just so
no,
funny.
No, I
because
was proven wrong very, very quickly.
It's just so funny.
He ran off like 12 points.
A few texts later, and we're
in
it's
one
just
minute.
Like, gibberish being thrown in the group text after you had just said that he should probably sit the rest of the game.
But you have to watch him go back on the court, and he just hurt his ankle. He has a long history of ankle injuries, and you're just like, dude, it's March, or late February. Like, why is this? Who cares?
Collectively holding our breath on that. But by the end, you're just like, you can't help but laugh when you see the shot go up. You see Ennis Kanter holding his arms up as soon as it goes up. And you just think, like, we may never see anything like this again.
Was it Andre Roberson?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He realized half a second too late that it was
over. He just played defense the way he's played defense his entire life.
Yeah, that's the problem. You can't.
It defies the logic of any basketball playing that anyone has ever done defense that way. Like, I played in a rec league game earlier this week. Obviously, it's freaking similar. but just listen. You know, you're playing 2-3 zone. I'm standing, like, at the fucking free throw line. Like, of course, I would never pick someone up at three-quarter court or whatever. And for NBA players, expand that out, obviously, to 5 feet beyond 3-point, 10, 15, whatever. But the point is the same. If some kid showed up in your rec league game and started shooting from a half court, you couldn't blame your teammates for not checking him up there.
The crazy thing is, if you go early to Warriors games, which I think at this point is like a hobby of anyone that covers basketball, like, you have to go early and watch Steph warm up. He practices that exact shot on the court, that like 10 feet in front of the three-point line, like beginning of the logo, basically across the whole court. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like an accident.
That shot is literally a shot that he takes 40 of before the game.
He's going to pull up from half in a game soon.
I mean, he like basically almost did to win it. But yeah, I mean, it's not. Very few people, if anyone, can pull up with such confidence like that. And to him, it looks so easy.
I think one of the funny things, too, is like it almost seems like he's finally realizing that he's like allowed to obnoxiously celebrate. Like, after he made that shot, he like did like three different spots on the court, like hit the Bernie, like jumped up and did a chest bump with someone. Like, it's almost like over the last like 2 months, like, Steph finally realized that he's so damn good that like he's allowed to like dance a little bit. Like, I feel like we didn't see this level of obnoxious celebrating last year, did we?
No.
Am I crazy?
He's so much better than everyone now that
it's amazing.
He's enjoying it.
But I'm saying he's got to work on the celebrations a little bit. It seems like
he shouldn't do them, or that he needs better ones.
No, he just should be more prepared. He's like, he's almost like a little bit surprised, like, oh, like, oh yeah, like I'm allowed to like celebrate like a dick.
Well, he's also being like,
I love it.
He doesn't realize until he's out there that he's that much better than everyone. Like, there's right. He's like learning in real time that he's this good at basketball, because there's no other time to learn this. You know, next year he'll know, but now that he's like on his way up, he's learning as it's happening, and we're watching him in real time realize that he's this much better than everyone.
All right, just a few quick points on the Thunder.
Okay.
I know, but before we start, it's like, all right, we're not going to talk too much about this, but it's impossible not to. But do we? I mean, the Thunder. So they've lost to them. It was a close game on Super Bowl weekend, and they were up in that game. They lost. Either overtime or it was like a one possession game late. I can't remember, but they lost in a close one then. And then they basically have a miracle happen for the Warriors for them to lose again. You know, are they a real threat against the Warriors, or is just Warriors against everybody else right now? And it doesn't matter how good Kevin Durant and Westbrook play, that the Warriors are going to win regardless.
I mean, for me, I think the problem is just finding like what's their crunch time five. Like, that's really going to bother the Warriors, like, when it all comes down to it.
I agree, but then you see, like, the plays where they just give it to Russell Westbrook and he storms to the to the hoop, and it's like, well, that's a pretty good play. They should just run that every single time.
Yeah, seriously.
Why do they need four other... Why do they need to be surrounded by shooters or anything else? I mean, shooters would help spread the court, and they have Kevin Durant, but, like, that's... Or give it to KD and just watch him, like, jab step and sink a jump. Like, these are pretty unstoppable.
I mean, outside of a 40-foot jumper from Steph Curry, the most unstoppable play in basketball might just be Russell Westbrook running north-south and
that's probably
barreling
the most
over
unstoppable. Yeah.
People.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I
think they can win, you know. I think just off the strength of those two guys going hammer for, you know, a full series, they're going to maybe take two games from the Warriors, but, you know.
Yeah.
I think
mean,
it's
my fear
Warriors
is,
in six, if that's the case.
My fear is we're not even going to see them play each other.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Spurs.
I think we much rather see that series than Warriors-Spurs,
no? Thoughts.
Okay, let's get it.
I think their takes are a little too hot, to be honest. And I'm not. I think they're probably wrong, but they're just thoughts.
Nah, bring the heat.
One
son.
Is that the Spurs
it's cold out here. In these
one
streets.
Is that despite their record, the Spurs this year are maybe like
50. They're 50-9 for anyone who doesn't have.
Yeah. They're maybe a regular season team that's going to lose to the Thunder, Clippers, or Warriors in the playoffs.
I mean, it happened last year.
I just think they might be not. And I just don't think they match up well against those teams.
Does Tim Duncan even play basketball anymore?
I mean, we mentioned before, like, the Parker-Ginobili potential backcourt of, you know, how that can't really keep up defensively these days. And I don't know. I just think that maybe those other teams are just stronger to upset the Warriors or Thunder. That's my one thought. Here's the other thought, which is the opposite. It's that I don't think the Spurs are going to do much in the playoffs this year as far as getting out of the West, but that Kawhi Leonard is just getting better and better and better, and that Aldridge needs like a full year to become the Spurs robot that he's becoming.
Yeah.
And that then next year, the Spurs are going to be just as good as what the Warriors are doing this year or like last year or whatever, and that the Spurs are slowly going to re-energize into a juggernaut again.
Well, I think...
And be very, 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 very good next year.
Part of the reason we might even see the Warriors get to the 73-9 or 72-10 mark is just because they have to keep pace ahead of the Spurs. I mean, they're only
the Spurs look
they're
great.
Four
I mean,
games out, and the Warriors are 54-5. Like, that's like the story no one's
almost,
really talking about.
I almost
about.
Just, yeah, that take was hot because I'm just trying to drum something up that's interesting about the Spurs. Like, there's just not
and
a lot
neither
there.
Of them have lost a game at home. That's absurd.
I think the last time...
Yeah, that's so crazy.
I checked the other day. I think the last time the Warriors lost at home was... January of last year when Derrick Rose hit a jumper to win in overtime. And the
speaking of which, just to clean something up from
he's
before,
doing Googles already.
Michael Beasley has played more games than the NBA.
Oh, shouts to me.
Yo, by a lot.
The top.
By a lot. 433 to 389.
That is wild.
That's, that's so sad.
That might be the craziest stat I've heard in a long time.
And you just made it up, too.
No,
that's true.
That more often.
That's so depressing.
Hey, you had a 50-50 shot. So.
Young Flago in the building with with the takes.
AKA Young Fact Check. It's late, but it's here.
Oh, man. What else we got? I still think the Blazers are going to climb up to maybe the 5 seed because I think Dallas and Memphis are about to go on a skid at some point. I mean, they just have to by law of average.
Here's a hot take. Memphis Grizzlies, wild underrated.
Lance Stephenson unleashed has
possibly,
been amazing to watch the last week.
You know what else?
And
also, guess what else? Guess what we're looking at right now? 4-5. Clippers Grizzlies.
Again.
We're looking at the Lance Stephenson
Ooh.
Revenge
I know.
Tour.
I know, dude.
That would
I've been
be
thinking
so
about that.
Fire.
I've been up late
and
thinking
Matt Barnes
about that.
For that matter, right?
Dude, for the last week.
Imagine
I
that
have,
lineup.
Oh, my God.
I have spent way more time that shit thinking about Lance Stephenson going back to LA.
Maybe we get the return of Z-Bo.
Imagine the Snapchats.
Not the return, but like the, you know, just like he caps off his career with a dominant
the reboot.
Western Conference playoff run. I hope
yeah,
that
Z-Bo
happens.
Versus
I mean, I'm here
Z-Bo
for that,
and
man.
Griffin, too. Yeah.
I'm here for all
they hate
that.
Each other.
Can I give you a quick Z-Bo story?
Please.
I have a weird
Is there
Z-Bo
a take
story.
Involved?
No, I have no, I'm out of takes.
Pass.
All right, I'm out.
Nah, go ahead.
I was in Memphis a couple years ago for a story. And
damn, stunting is a habit.
In Memphis. Because I was in Memphis. The long story short is I see Zach Randolph in the middle of the day and I interview him and I interview him in a hallway and he gets really close to me while we're talking. I realize he's a close talker. You know when like people need to be talked to you, real close
when
to you.
When you ask me a question, how many times do you respond? Yeah.
There was a lot of that actually. Yeah.
That's his thing.
Yeah. And then so anyway, that night they play the Thunder and he dominates. It was like a close game all game and in the last 3 minutes, Z-Bo just goes ham. And this is the height of like the Gasol-Randolph combo of, you know, bullying people. They still had Rudy Gay at the time. It was that lineup. And I'm standing in between the Gasol locker room and the Z-Bo locker. And it's the scrum around Marc Gasol's locker. And I'm standing on the outside of it. While it's happening, it was right next to Zach Randolph's locker. And Zach Randolph walks back to his locker and is about to start getting changed. And he notices me standing on the outside of Gasol's, you know, scrum, just kind of watching it happen. And he drops his towel to get dressed and then notices me and like is really excited because I was there to do this cover story on the Grizzlies.
Wait.
This is a true story.
Power through the story. Just keep going.
This is a true story. And then he puts his arm around me and like gets really close, and with his right hand, you know, with his left hand he puts around me, and with his right hand he comes in for the pound. To like, you know, and I was just like, oh, good game, Zeebo. He's like, yeah. And he gets really close and pounds me. And this is a naked Zach Randolph doing this. And then okay, he drops so his arm.
You mean
and
he
turns
gave you a
around.
Fist bump, is what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't be weird. I'm just talking about
as
naked.
If this wasn't weird enough.
Just talking about Zeebo pounding you.
This is all, it's all story. Good. Yeah, yeah. He gave me a fist bump. And then he turned back around and went about his business, which was, you know, I kind of looked the opposite way and gave him like a no look fist bump to get through it.
Yeah.
But it's by far the weirdest like locker room interaction story I've had to this day.
Locker rooms are weird as hell to yes. begin with. And
period. Yeah. Full stop.
And
that is evidence.
That only makes it that much weirder.
Yeah. I mean, that's the amount of like random, dumb locker room stories that I'm sure we all have that just you could just name off top. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I saw Big Baby Davis just absolutely murdering a full spread of chicken tenders and fries roughly like 26 minutes before a game.
I want details.
Just catch up everywhere, like all over his face. It's
yeah,
between 20 and 40 minutes before tip-off.
I've spoken with Figs about this many times, but starting either a Tumblr or a blog of what NBA players eat.
Yeah.
Yes.
I got breakfast with a retired NBA player pretty recently, and everybody else got yeah, it was really lavish breakfast at the diner around the corner from the studio. And everybody else has got, like, normal eggs, whatever, breakfast fare. He just looks at the waiter and goes, can I just have a chicken?
No way.
Yeah. Like, I just want a chicken, like a whole chicken. And the waiter looks at him and he goes, I don't know what you mean, but yeah. And so he got, like, a chicken, four eggs, sausage and bacon on the side, and... It was, I mean, I don't know how you could eat that much.
And that was in public.
These
imagine what they do in the locker
feet
room.
Tall, yeah.
And they yeah.
Retired, though?
Yeah. Well, I think you eat more. Do you eat more or less? Because you don't care. So you're eating a lot. But
you
gotta
fuel up, bro.
You're not working it off the way you would if you were playing. I don't know.
Right.
It's not even just the food. Like, just, I mean, I saw Maurice Spates get dressed one time.
Look, man, I'm not trying to throw people under the bus here.
I'm not under the bus. Maurice Spates put on, like, the top half of his full uniform, like the jersey, the shooting sleeve, but he still had jeans on. Like, it was the strangest thing I've ever seen. It was so funny. Stuff like that, just, you know, anytime you walk in the locker room.
And to think, like, he does that 82 times a year, so I wonder if that's...
tradition, bro.
Or if he just puts it on a different way each time.
I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah. All right. Do we care about anything else? I wanted to bring up the Heat earlier, but you guys shot that down with the quickness.
Pete, tell us about the Heat.
I really like the Heat. I think they could make a run for the Eastern Conference Finals. I think the Joe Johnson pickup was big. Hassan Whiteside.
I mean, it's their fourth. It's not. I'm agreeing with you.
Do you really think the Joe Johnson pickup was big?
Yeah.
Why?
He's good at basketball.
What did he say today? Like,
your guys' takes are too hot, man.
Miami.
I gotta leave.
Playing with Miami is already the most that he's run in the last 8 years.
He's the most funny time, like the last 6, 7, 8 years. That's a fire quote.
Yeah, because the other quote from D Wade was he told him, "Yeah, come live in Miami, bro. It's the best place to live." And he was like, "Oh, all right."
Yeah, that's why I think he's about to kill. I mean, he had
Joe Johnson.
Yeah.
I don't think he's about to kill.
He had 25 points in his second game with them.
No, I know. And he's still good at scoring.
So what else do they need him for?
No, I just don't know if he has it on that
team
level
outings
of scoring 25
Beach.
Points every game. I just think he's like too... I don't think he's there physically.
I'm just not sure
especially if he just ran more than he's ran.
I wish there was a camera in here so you could see me one fuming, too bewildered at what's being said to me right now.
I'm just not sure that the acquisition of Joe Johnson is moving the needle that much.
I agree.
That's all I'm saying.
I think you guys are off mollies right now. That's
I
a
mean, look,
huge pickup for them.
Pete, having said all that, you're saying that they have a good chance of making the Eastern Conference Finals as if that's like a pretty big accomplishment. I mean, they're fourth in the East. Of course they can make the...
They didn't make the playoffs.
They're
last
a game
year.
And a half out of the third seed. So
to go from not making the playoffs to the Eastern Conference Finals
of
is a
course,
huge deal.
But I'm saying...
You don't want to see LeBron and
with
the
where
Cavs
they are,
take on Miami in the Eastern Conference
But with where they
finals.
Are, them getting to the Eastern Conference Finals is not that crazy of a thought, is all I'm saying. I would love to see that series, the Wade versus LeBron Eastern Conference Finals. I just don't think it's...
Well, they're not beating
Cleveland. I don't think you're taking
it. If they finish
enough.
In the fourth
I'm saying
seed.
Warm it up.
Yeah,
man. Well, I'm all out of takes.
Only way that happens, right, is if they get the 3 seed and potentially go through Toronto.
They do have to get the 3 seed.
Why do they have to get the 3 seed?
Well, that, I mean, well, you're according to Pete, it doesn't matter.
You think
matter.
They can beat the Cavs?
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
As currently constructed.
That is
with
what he's
possibly
saying.
No first watch.
I think they definitely could.
In that case, the East is
ludicrous.
More open than
why is that
most
ludicrous?
People think.
I just don't think that.
Why do you have confidence in the Cavs to begin with?
Why do I have confidence in the Cavs?
Yeah.
Because they have LeBron James.
Yeah, and also because they're 42-17, and they've been a mess this season. Like, as long as they get rolling a little bit, then if they have another gear, then I don't think they can be messed with.
It's a lot of ifs.
Yeah, it's a lot of ifs, but, you know, look, the Heat have ifs, too. Joe Johnson has to stay alive, even though he's ran more than he ran in a decade.
Dwayne Wade, too.
Dwayne Wade, yeah. Dwayne Wade's looked good this year.
Yeah.
Shout out Hassan Whiteside for crushing recently.
He's really been good.
Yeah. You know how mad Pete is? He just wheeled across the studio to look at a computer.
We've never had this level of Googling. Unbelievable.
He's pulling up, like, ancient documents right now.
I didn't know we were allowed to bring stats in here.
I don't...
The hell?
Pete's about to bring in like four, like an analytics team to prove his point.
Or he's not. Or if what he Googles doesn't help him, he's not going to say anything.
Your quote, Joe Johnson needs to stay alive. I mean, he hasn't missed more than
10
games in a season since 2011.
But apparently now he's running like he hasn't in a full decade.
No, that's not what he said. He said, I've had the most fun.
No, he also, there's a running quote. He said, I haven't ran this much. Unless there was a typo.
Where'd you get this quote?
Google it.
Twitter?
Tumblr.
Tumblr. The what NBA players
he
eat Tumblr?
He Snapchatted it at me.
Look, man, all I'm saying is it's the Joe Johnson revenge tour.
I hope so. I actually think Joe Johnson's cool as shit.
Yeah, why are you guys hating on my man Joe?
No,
I'm not hating on him at all.
Saying,
I just don't
think
it
cool
pushes
shit.
The Heat past
what
the
What do you think of the fact that he chose
Miami?
I didn't
Miami? Say it would.
What do you think of the fact that he chose Miami?
Maybe I did. Yeah. I forget. I can't even keep up with my
You kind of did.
Anymore.
So if you're Joe Johnson, you could have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? And he chose Miami.
I think he made the right choice.
Which I think is a badass decision, yeah.
Okay. I think that's an amazing decision.
For lifestyle, in the lifestyle sense.
LeBron openly recruited him, said he wants him. He said no.
Oklahoma City would have been perfect. Basketball-wise.
Joe Johnson says the past 2 games are the most he's run in, quote, 7, 8, 9 years.
I'm doing the Hassan Whiteside flex right now.
I mean,
I'm saying he hasn't ran a lot. He's a professional
athlete. I think he can handle running.
I just told you I saw a professional athlete murdering some Nathans in the locker room. Just because they're a professional athlete doesn't mean they are ready to.
Have you seen
what
Zico?
Are you talking about?
Yeah, that was about the relevancy. Also, I was about to bring up Zach Randolph, but actually Zach Randolph has killed everyone on the basketball court for many years while being, you know, having a robust figure, so that doesn't prove anything.
Robust.
All right, to completely shift gears here, shout out to Kyle O'Quinn for even being an NBA player, because everything he does looks like it's by accident. I don't think I've ever gotten more joy than watching him play basketball as I did them with Figment against the Blazers the other night when he inexplicably played 27 minutes.
Rambis is a mess right now. Yeah, we spend a minute.
How does Jimmer not
that?
Get more burn?
Jimmer's off the squad, bro.
I know what I'm saying.
Jose Calderon's getting way too many minutes. The whole Knicks are a mess.
Well, at least they win. Their executive is win the Twitter wars.
How's
I mean,
it going?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, priorities, guys. Priorities.
Yeah, got to let these tweets off. If you're popping on Twitter, does anything else really matter?
No.
Let's frame that.
All right, let's check Joe Johnson's Twitter activity to get the real bottom of this argument.
He never
hypothetical?
Tweets. He almost never tweets.
Yeah, real quick, because we got to go in a minute.
Okay, all right, here's one. And it kind of goes back to the Warriors thing that we're talking about. Let's say there's a cloning machine, right? Cloning is a thing, okay? This is a hypothetical. I can say whatever that I want.
You're looking at me like you need a validation.
Yeah, yeah,
me.
I just want you to be like, yes.
I didn't know there wasn't
cloning
a cloning.
Exists. And you cloned Steph Curry 12 times. Well, 11 times plus the current Steph Curry. So you have 12 Steph Currys, and that's your NBA team. How many wins? All factors considered, how many wins?
So you got no big guys, is what you're saying.
Correct.
So you have all.
I don't know if that matters.
You have all 6'2½ shooters,
but that good. Yeah.
How many wins?
How many wins? How do you finish in the 2016-17 playoff race?
I mean, I don't think that...
I thought I would stump you
Well,
guys.
They can't stop anyone.
I know, that's the thing.
They like, won't get a single like, stop.
Defense is harder.
You say there's...
But I guess like
nobody can stop him.
Demons on offense.
Here's the other thing, though. They kind of protect Steph Curry a little bit on defense, right? Like, because he's the best player.
Right.
Which I think all teams do with their best player.
Absolutely.
But you don't have to protect if you have 12 of them. Like, he could just be constantly...
You don't have to, or you don't get to.
It doesn't...
Maybe he's not that great on defense, and...
Either way,
on every
I'm
time.
Saying like he can get hurt. One version of Steph,
oh, because
like,
he
could have
come
constant
off the bench.
Injuries. Injuries don't matter anymore.
Yeah, but what happens when, like, oh, there's a dominant big man? What happens when there's a dominant big man on the other team?
Yeah, well, it does happen.
You gotta. But you how do you stop torched. That team from scoring 150 points?
You gotta go stop small ball. I
you're
guess,
right.
Against
but
them.
How do you stop the Steph Curry lineup of going 150 points?
No,
every
that's
time?
What I mean.
Well, do you think that team is better than
you're talking about the 7-footer team?
No, I'm not even worried about like a center dominating. Like, I would just let him get Wilt numbers and then just
score threes.
And then I mean, just he's gonna have to play in the perimeter on defense, right?
Would that team be better than the current Warriors?
I'm not allowed to.
I don't think they would.
I
don't think they would. I don't think they would be better than the current Golden State Warriors.
Are they better than the current?
Now, if you told me it was
better than
two
the current,
Steph Currys,
are they better than the current Memphis Grizzlies, or like Mavericks or a team like that? Blazers.
Probably I think they're definitely better than an average NBA team.
Note that they have zero humans above 6'3".
Hold on. I mean, also this one thing you're not considering also is like
I think we're
you
making
how,
too big a deal of this hype.
No.
They have 12 of the best players in the league. I
Listen,
think they're going to win a shitload of games.
I agree. Also, on top of that,
it's going to be rough.
On top of that,
basketball is a two-way sport.
You know how like
I still need to only play one side
what,
of the
defense?
Court. No.
One thing you're not thinking about
also.
Picking
people at half court.
I
like,
so listen.
Are you what do you want?
I'm saying when you're
what do you want?
You should just shut the hell up so I can get this bad analogy
Jesus.
Off.
This is the
get
last
this analogy off.
This is the last point of the entire podcast.
Oh,
you better
God.
Make it
okay,
fire.
You guys are going to hate on it so much. All right, so you know when you're playing pickup, right?
No, after you got to give your official answer.
You're playing pickup, right? And there'll
already,
be like
I already did.
Two guys like roughly the same height and they're both wearing like red shorts and a white shirt and you're in transition.
Awful, whatever
you're in transition, it's kind of hard to remember which dude you
are
were
you
checking.
Kidding me? You
Meanwhile,
kidding me?
There's five Steph Currys out there. How do you even does it matter which one you pick up, I guess?
What are you talking about?
I'm saying dude, if you're getting back on D, how,
like who guards
you,
who?
Yeah.
Why
are
would
they
that
all
matter?
The same?
They're all the same.
They're all literally the same?
No,
yeah,
there's
but
12 of
their name is the same.
You just go to the one that's closest to you. The only reason you have matchups on a court is to like guard the right guy.
Yeah, if it's all the same player, it doesn't matter.
You gotta account, but you got to account for
that
every
actually,
person.
You're kind of right. It's like way harder
Thank
to
you.
Guard them.
Thank you.
All right, what if it was
makes sense if you think
but
about it.
But my point is more it's like that skill level. They could have different hair color if it helps you play defense.
Team would be fire. Oh, now they can have different hair color.
Yeah, to I don't know. Can you get an official
if
official
if they
answer?
All had Kawhi Leonard's braids, then yeah, they're going 82-0.
My official answer is 65 wins. And they,
this guy really charted this shit out.
And they, I think
like
they
losses to the Spurs.
They beat the Heat in the NBA Finals by seven games.
All right, here's my counter.
I think they would struggle on defense more than you guys.
Here's
think.
My counter question: what if it was 12 Kyle Singlers?
All right, they would win zero games.
Yeah. And two Steph Currys.
Okay, and two Steph Currys.
Now let's give them three.
Pete, help us get this back on the rails, please.
I'm looking up.
I was going to keep going, but then I thought we weren't allowed to make any more.
Oh, like how many Steph Currys versus Kyle Singlers you'd have to have to be a playoff team?
Yeah, what's the ratio? What's the
like you need?
What's the playoff Steph Curry to Kyle Singler ratio? That's an advanced analytic.
Three.
Advanced that.
Minimum three.
All right. Interview
3-9.
Interview with Shay Khan coming up. Thank you everybody for listening. I checked. It's the website manchilddoc.com. If you want to check out the promo or the trailer, excuse me, or you could just Google Shay Khan Manchild. It'll be the first thing that pops up. We'll post a link to the story we did with him back in 2011, I think, and that was written by Agri Sam. Thank you everybody for listening. Still undecided if this was our last episode or not. I'm going to take the night to dwell
we'll
on it.
We'll be back. Well, hopefully enough people subscribe, listen on SoundCloud, wherever you listen. Keep us alive, please, like Joe Johnson.
Shout out to you if you made it through this one, you know.
All right, shout out Joe Period. Johnson. Peace. Joined now by Shay Cotton. Where you at right now, Shay? You out in L.A.?
Yeah, I'm actually my home in Long Beach.
Oh, word. Well, we really thank you for joining the show, man. We appreciate you taking some time.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we the three of us got a chance to see Manchild. Your publicist was nice enough to send us over a screener. We really enjoyed the flick. Happy it got made. So, you know, I was just thinking, I was doing some research. I remember when I started as an intern at Slam back in 2012, I saw the original preview for Manchild. I think it had Ron Artest in it. It was a quick 45-second teaser. So, you know, can you just tell us real quick, like, how the whole thing came together and, you know, it, how long of a process it was and what you went through to get it done?
Well, the whole Manchild documentary itself came together as I was finishing up my career plan. I guess 37 now. I retired right around 29, 30, so about eight years back. My initial guy that did the videography talked to me about possibly doing something, and you know, the timing wasn't so good at that moment, and we reconnected months down the road. We started filming and then getting a lot of interviews and stuff like that. You know, the first trailer that you saw was the initial stage, and then things didn't quite work out, so I had to take it forward and finished up with another group, our true group, which is the director on the piece right now that everybody's seeing, and I'm really happy with it where it is. You know, they brought my vision to life, and you know, it was probably 3 years of production, and now we're in a space where, you know, we just want to get it in the market and go with the right distribution company and make sure, you know, we're with the right agency and stuff like that for the marketing and promotion. So it's a lot of interviewing and stuff like that and meetings being done right now. So this is the most important decision of my life. It's kind of like being recruited all over again in college. Like, you take the visits, you got five schools you narrow it down to, and then you kind of dial that number in, and you know, you ultimately have a couple to choose from and make it easy on yourself.
Shay, from your perspective, I mean, at this point in your life, why do you want to make this movie? What are you hoping to accomplish? What are you hoping people will take from it?
Just to shed light on, you know, the business of basketball and how hard it really is to make the NBA, and you know what you do when you have disappointments. You know, I was the number one player in the country, so everybody can't say that. You know, everybody has a story to tell, but this one is uniquely different. It's not just about basketball. It's a humanitarian story. And, you know, quite frankly, I mean, it's unbelievable what's going on right now. I mean, God is good. You know, I've probably had almost 18 interviews, you know, podcasts, articles, whatever the case may be, in the last 4 weeks, which is unheard of. I'm not playing in the NBA, so I know there's a demand for the story and there's a calling on my life, and it's very important that kids as well as adults take a close look at this Manchild piece.
Now, Shay, one of the things from the film, you know, without giving too much away, is there's NBA players in there, NFL players, seems like so many different people that you were able to connect with during your career. Is that crazy to kind of look back on and just all these names and guys that people, you know, talk?
Yeah, I mean, when I think about it, it's like, man, that dude at that time, you know, and I didn't realize it then because I just loved to compete. I loved the game, and I put a lot of time and effort into it, you know, and I had a great run. You know, a lot of people look at it, oh, he fell short, this or that. I don't necessarily feel that. I used to feel that maybe about 8 years back before I buried the hatchet, but I don't feel that anymore. You know, I have a piece, and I'm in the service of helping kids now, and I'm excited about my future. Just the fact that I have to, guys of this magnitude, Meta World Peace, Paul Pierce, Tyson Chandler, Jason Hart, Elton Brand, you know, guys like that, they're not going to just vouch for anybody. So obviously I was doing something that was very credible.
Of all those guys, you know, the ones that you play with and against, looking back, did any one of them give you like the hardest time when you were actually on the court?
There was one guy that matched my intensity. I wouldn't say the hardest time because I pretty much had my way with a lot of guys. I worked really hard. I've set the bar from an early age. I have to say Kobe Bryant was the only guy that really matched my intensity. You know, Meta was a defensive guy and very physical, so, you know, that was a good matchup as well. But, you know, outside of that, you know, I pretty much had my way. I mean, even when I played Kobe, I mean, it was a tough battle, but I got the better end of it. So, you know, a lot to look forward to moving from here to help kids, and I'm just excited about where we are in the space with this Manchild documentary.
Shay, can you tell us what that was like a little bit? I mean, you're 13, 14, 15, 16 years old. You're, you know, the best basketball player as far as, you know, anyone has maybe even ever heard of, or at least at the time by far. I mean, what's the day-to-day life as far as people approaching you, being kind of this like local celebrity? I mean, this was pre-internet, I guess, so it wasn't the way it would be today, but just as far as the lifestyle of being at that age and being so, you know, almost locally famous or famous in the basketball world, however you want to put it.
Yeah, just like a rock star, you know, my team being the rock band. Everywhere I went, you know, gyms were packed, you know, from 12 years old on up. You know, my AAU team won 168 games and lost 2 games in 2 years. That's unheard of. Like, you know, it's something that set the tone, I think, on the West Coast for sure, with the grassroots AAU scene. And today, you know, it's normal for kids to get all the exposure and the gear and everything. But back then, it was unprecedented. So I think I really set the tone, as well as setting the bar at that time, and made people work harder and stay on their A game, you know, because everybody was gunning for me. I have a lot of my success came early, and I held a bit of it for a while. But, you know, eventually you can only stay up there for so long, and then people just start gunning for you, and they keep working, and start evening the score a little bit. But all the way through, you know, I was able to maintain some good stats, very respectable. You know, I played at a very high level. You know, at that age, 13, 14, 15 years old, I'm a kid in a man's game, you know, playing in a business at that. I didn't understand it then. I do now. And I'm thankful that I have the insight and the wisdom that I can give to the kids, along with the gifts that I was blessed with. And I think people that, you know, is involved with our program are going to really benefit, not just on the court, but as people, because what's more important is what I'm doing in my life today, not just what I did to entertain, man.
Shay, you've mentioned a few times now the work you do with kids. You know, at what point after maybe your NBA career, you realized your NBA career wasn't going to work out, did you realize, you know, you still had purpose in the basketball world and you could share your stories with others and your struggles with others to help them?
Right around the time when I decided to retire, my daughter was born. She's 7 now. So right around 30, 31 years old, I knew I wanted to do something more. I wanted to leave a legacy. You know, I knew I did a lot for the game. You know, in my city, real basketball people know, you know, they didn't know that I should have been in that space, but God had a different plan for my life. And, you know, at that point when I was at peace about not making it, and thinking about what I wanted to do to impact lives for the future is when I started my basketball academy, SCBA. You know, we started doing a lot of training, mentoring, doing a lot of speaking engagements. My whole thing is I just wanted to flood the market and impact as many people as I can. And I think that we're taking the same approach with the documentary. The only difference is we want to do this domestically as well as international. And I think we're getting closer and closer by the day. So, you know, to say that I had all those experiences and maybe fell short of my dreams as far as playing in the NBA long term, I'm able to bless so many other people and inspire people, I think that's a success in itself.
Absolutely. And just to follow up to that, when you're working with these kids and you're going to these camps and speaking, you know, how much of yourself do you see in these kids now? And, you know, how much do you warn them about, you know, overexposure or, you know, building their brand new too early? Because kids now, you know, by the time they're 18, they're household names. So, and you experienced that. So how much do you share with them in that regard?
Well, I try to share as much as possible. I don't see anybody like myself. And I think that's the hard part, because I have to create separation and not attack that like I'm looking at other kids like they're me, because they're not, you know. And a lot of these kids, even though they may be household names, they didn't face the talent that I faced. So it's a diluted market that we're viewing today, that we're experiencing. And I think that's a big part of why the basketball isn't quite as good, as competitive, and guys aren't quite as polished. And, you know, what our program and the kids we're working with, we're enforcing that, you know, you have to be a student of the game, not just a player. You have to do your homework, you know, watch a lot of film. You need to do your research, do the history of basketball, players before you. You know, you got to make a lot of sacrifices if you want to be good. And if you want to be great, you have to push yourself past exhaustion, and the cards have to be stacked up for you. You got to have some luck on your side, and, you know, spiritually, you know, God has to have a plan for you. Everybody's got a different position in life. We all can't take the same walk, and, you know, my walk wasn't meant for everybody to take. Look, it got very difficult, man. I went from the poster child to the whipping boy. And, you know, it's easy to be on top and do things right then, but when everything is against you and everybody turns their back, what do you do then? And I can speak to both of those.
Now, Shay, obviously the man-child, you know, moniker is one that, you know, was bestowed upon you. But can you maybe tell us, like how much bigger than the other kids were you? And when did you start dunking before everyone else? Like, how much of a physical presence were you to earn that kind of nickname?
I think the physical prowess is like the LeBron James of today. He's a mismatch, you know, to anybody that's pretty much guarding him in the game. I was pretty much the same. I was quicker than the bigger guys. Smaller guys weren't strong enough. You know, my first step was probably my best attribute. And, you know, I could score the ball a lot of different ways. I could handle, you know, I could shoot. I knew how to create for my teammates. You know, I didn't mind rebounding the ball. I do a lot of weak side help, blocking shots and different things. I just wanted to change the game, you know. And I felt like if I could be one guy that could change the game on the court with my team, I knew that I was special. And if I could raise their level to make them better and we could win more games than most, I felt like I'd be in a good situation. I think I was successful doing that. You know, today is a little different. I think things are more monetarily driven and kind of exposure-based. And it was more of a team concept back then, more family-oriented.
Shay, you played all over the world, you know, when you ended up going pro, you know, overseas, Asia, Venezuela, you know, all over the place. What for you, throughout your pro career, was there ever a point where you were really having fun? Like when you look back and you say, that was the most fun I had playing basketball, what stop was that?
Man, probably on the EA Sports Tour team when I got a chance to play with my brother and some guys that I reconnected with, like Kevin Stink Norris from Baltimore, who played at the University of Miami. He was special himself. I mean, a lot of guys we got a chance to reconnect with. Kwame Evans, another Baltimore guy that played at George Washington. So there's just opportunities you can reconnect with guys. The thing that I miss most is the bond that I shared with a lot of guys coming up that we would see playing, you know, on a national level. The Riverside Church teams with Lamar Odom and, you know, Elton Brand and Ron Artest. You know, the New York Gauchos with Stephon Marbury and them. You know, these guys, we pretty much separated. Everybody went in their own directions. I think that's the hardest thing for ball players when you're done. That bond that, you know, that you kind of lose because you don't get a chance to connect with a lot of guys.
Which one of those stops was, like, the strangest place? Like, did you ever find yourself in some foreign city and lost or anything, and be like, I have no idea where I am, I don't speak the language, like, I feel, you know, crazy, out of place? Did anything like that ever happen throughout your career?
Yeah, I mean, my first gig out the shoot was EuroLeague playing with KK Partizan, Belgrade, Slavia, which is Serbia now. Vlade Divac on the team, and we had the same agent, so it was an easy deal for me, and I had a lot of fun once I got acclimated, but it was tough that first month and a half, the language barrier. It was really cold, you know, when the acquisition went through, when I got the job. And it really tested me. I was by myself. I didn't have anybody come over, girlfriend or, you know, none of my boys. I just took it on the chin and I did it, you know, and I think it really helped me develop as an individual to prepare me for life and where I am today and where I'm going.
Shay, without giving too much away about the movie, you know, there's a great scene between you and Scoop Jackson, who is a longtime slam writer, probably the most famous slam writer there is. You know, what do you remember about that, spending time with him and just being in Slam Magazine as a teenager?
It was a lot of fun, man. I mean, you know, just kind of like floating on a cloud. I mean, putting all this work in, you're having a good time, you're winning, you're playing well, you feel good. It feels like nothing you can't touch, nothing you can't do. And Scoop at that time, you know, very vibrant, you know, a basketball historian, and he had followed me and knew a lot about my game, you know, was very knowledgeable. You know, it's just something that I'll never forget, I hold dear. I mean, that particular interview we were doing, I think it was NBA 24/7 in the documentary itself, and, you know, we're friends still to this day. So that's something about me that a lot of people don't know, because, you know, basketball has overshadowed a lot of my other talents, me as a person. And I think Man-Child, the documentary, is going to give people an in-depth look, you know, more of a close-up about me as a person and my family and some things that took place that really were out of my control that people had really no idea about.
Shay, if there's a kid now, he's 13, 14 years old, he's dominating his peers, That would mean he's, you know, probably already being covered on the internet. He might have a Ball Is Life or a Hoop mixtape coming his way within the next, you know, year, maybe 2 years. So it's probably all happening, you know, huge social media following, all that. You get a chance to sit down with a kid like that for maybe an hour, tell him your story, but then also give him advice as far as how to handle, you know, the media and then, you know, the day-to-day lifestyle. What kind of, you know, bullet points are you giving them, or what kind, you know, what's that conversation like?
Just, you know, stay grounded, you know, stay hungry, stay humble for sure. You know, the pen writes both ways, so don't get caught up in reading articles and stuff like that. You know, I keep hearing these mixtapes. It's funny to me when I hear this stuff, because it's like, who needs a mixtape? Like, if you're good, they're going to find you. Like, I didn't have none of that stuff. And I was on ESPN when I was 12. Classic Sports America, SSA, Sunk His Kids. I mean, I was getting national attention before I even went into high school. I mean, what I did at Modern Day, when people saw me play, it was snippets of what I was doing at AAU circuit. I was, like, destroying people, you know, and I don't have a lot of the footage now. So the stuff that's being shown in the documentary is, like, snippets of what they decided to call the man-child, the moniker that they gave me. And kids today, I mean, I would just tell them to stay close to the people that love you for who you are, not for what you do, you know, because it's the people that are there for you when things aren't so good and maybe you don't play so well are the ones that you want to keep close to you and make them proud, as well as yourself.
All right, so talking about, you know, the way you were destroying people, like, in AAU games and stuff, one of the guys was Steven Jackson, was in the film. And at one point, I think he said, you know, something to the effect of that, you know, it was as if you ate gunpowder before you got out on the court. Is that an appropriate way to kind of characterize your style out there?
That's pretty good, man. That's pretty good. I played with a chip on my shoulder, because at that time, you know, the West Coast didn't get a lot of respect. They felt the L.A. guys were soft, and, you know, I didn't grow up that way. It was nothing about me soft, you know, but the area I came up in, there was no punks in my neighborhood. We wasn't playing basketball. Me and my brother decided to make that commitment and, you know, kind of be the guys that came out of our area to be talked about for a long time. And I felt like we were successful. So for him to make that, you know, that correlation as far as eating gunpowder before games, that's pretty accurate.
Do you feel like, I mean, this is kind of off topic, but do you feel like, you know, if you go to courts now or go to see, you know, 14, 15-year-old kids play, you think they're too easy on each other? Like, everyone's too happy? Like, they should be destroying each other like back in the day?
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants to be friends. I mean, I was in Toronto for the All-Star game, and everybody's talking to each other in between timeouts and possessions. You know, I understand it's an All-Star game, but
damn,
still.
Damn, Shay, like, even at the All-Star game, they can't get along with each other?
Yeah, the level of competitiveness is just, I don't know, it's lacking, man. I don't know what happened. And I think the game is affected, and, you know, for the fans, you know, they don't get a chance to see real rivalries like we used to. I know they hype it up as a rivalry, but when you watch the game, it doesn't match. You know, I grew up in the 80s with the Showtime era. You know, you watch Magic play against Boston. They were beating them up. They played against the Pistons. They were trying to beat them down. Same thing with the Knicks. You know, you don't see that as much anymore. There's a few rivalries, and everybody else is pretty much middle of the road. So, you know, part of the reason why I got back into the game of basketball is to really help teach kids how to do it the right way, on and off the court.
So who are, like, the real ones to you right now in the league?
I'd say a guy like Russell Westbrook. Obviously, Kobe Bryant, you know, he's finishing up, but he's been able to reign supreme for a bit of time. You know, Kevin Durant's emerging. You know, these guys are gifted. I mean, they're consistent with their numbers. They lead their team the best they can. You know, and they're pretty much class acts. I mean, they don't get into trouble. You don't hear about them in the news with negative press. You know, these guys are something to look up to for a lot of the guys coming in, you know. But, I mean, as far as our era, I mean, a lot of these guys are dying off. I mean, Kobe would probably be one of the last ones, him and Kevin Garnett. Paul Pierce is still in. There's only a few guys that's still in, but that says something for guys that came up in my era to still be getting deals right now, making an impact on the court. Obviously, we were doing some things right when we were developing.
Shay, you made the comparison earlier to LeBron, you know, and I think it's been said a few places that you were kind of LeBron before LeBron. What did you think when you were watching LeBron's rise, as far as, you know, the hype and then him in the NBA? Like, what have you thought as you kind of watched it unfold?
I mean, it's nice for him. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, he's had an interesting ride. I mean, things just kind of worked for him. You know, there was not a whole lot of forks in the road, not a whole lot of stumbling blocks, you know, and to his credit, I mean, he's a mismatch. You know, he's a physical specimen. His prowess is probably what people compare minds to. That's why they say the LeBron before LeBron. But, you know, we're still different. You know, my game was different than his. I think he's more like a Magic Johnson. I was more like a Michael Jordan. You know, I had that, not that he's not aggressive and things like that, but I had that dog in me. You know, I wasn't trying to be boys with guys that I'm playing against. We can be cool after the game, but I'm trying to kill you right now because I wanted to eat. You know, I had a goal in mind. I wanted to play in the NBA. I wanted to be special. I wanted to take care of my family and, you know, make a name for the area that I came out of in Los Angeles.
Cool. Shay, you know, just running down names in the Manchild documentary, you got Baron Davis, Ron Artest, Steven Jackson, Casey Jacobson, Elton Brand, Randy Moss, the rapper Problem. You know, one of the interviews that stuck out to me was with Paul Pierce, and, you know, he says flat out that you were his biggest rival when you guys were kids and growing up in the L.A. neighborhood. And, you know, he's had an amazing career, NBA champion, still doing it today. You know, do you have any memories of going up against him when you guys were kids? Do you have a specific matchup with him that you remember?
Yeah, well, the probably the most memorable would be we were in Vegas. I was actually in summer school. I was flown in, and we played against them. And he actually had Kevin Garnett playing with him at that time. He was playing with the team Caseless Paces, which was our rival, and went in, and we had a hard-fought matchup. I played well, not well enough. I think I finished with close to 40, and we lost by like 7, and they were the victor, and I think that was one of his first wins ever beat me in like 6 years. So that was memorable to me because that was one of the first times I got a chance to play against and actually see Kevin Garnett. That was the first time I actually was sitting on the bench in between when I got a breather, and I got a chance to watch somebody and was like, wow, this dude can go right here. You know, it was just special. You know, 6'11", handling like a guard. You know, he could do so much and change the game without even having the ball in his hands.
All right, so one of the other players, obviously, you know, that had a big impact on you was your brother. Can you just talk a little bit about, you know, what it was like to have him coming up and kind of training by your side and how you guys had this whole plan? Like, just talk a little bit about, you know, you guys and your come up and doing it together.
Well, my brother's a big inspiration. I was blessed in that way. We're 2.5 years apart. We started in baseball. Both seemed to get bored around the same time with it, and we always played pickup on the playground. You know, we started to take it serious, and me and him would push each other. You know, he was always a step ahead of me, and we were close, and I wanted to be with him all the time, so I wound up playing with guys in his age group, which was 2.5, 3 years older, and that really helped me. It worked to my benefit, because when I would play against guys my age, I had the upper hand. I wasn't worried about getting hit, get knocked down, because I was getting that every day anyway, playing with his peers. So, and then when we work out and do things, you know, he was very aggressive with me, and, you know, he'd be physical with me to train me and get me ready for that next level. Us, when me and my brother became like guys that pushed each other in ways that maybe other people couldn't, because it was like a good competitiveness, that brotherly sibling rivalry type thing. So I owe a lot of it to him. And, you know, he just gave me a lot of pointers along the way, just kind of things to do, like different stuff I could do training wise and how to carry myself. And, you know, just try to shelter me from certain things, because it got crazy at a point when he was in college and I was in high school. And my high school team's getting more gear than he's getting on his college team. And then they're sending me stuff to the house that's like almost double. So it was like, well, where do you go from here? So my thing was just stay focused, stay grounded. You know, my parents were all about raising law-abiding citizens, hard-working, accountable people that, you know, that practice humility. And I stay dear to that today. I keep that close to my heart.
And now, obviously, your brother had like a very brief, you know, stint in the NBA. Was that at all sort of bittersweet for you or for both of you, or how did that kind of, you know, affect you guys?
I mean, I think I was happy with it. You know, for him, I was glad he made the NBA. He had a chance to play almost 4 years. You know, look, he worked himself from humble beginnings into that. You know, he'd tell you himself, yeah, he refers himself to like the fat girl in school that nobody wants, and then all of a sudden she loses all the weight. By the time she's ready to graduate, and she's got everybody that wants to take her out to the prom dance. So you know, it was that kind of thing for him. I was happy for him. I never looked at it like being bitter because, you know, I love my brother and I was happy for him. I was just like, you know, just kind of like dumbfounded with my career. Like, what happened? I don't understand how somebody can be so talented and destroy so many named guys and people see it and you don't even have to question it and to not have an opportunity to at least make a team. You know, my whole thing was, okay, I don't get drafted, but I can't get invited to a camp. You know, I was so close to making the NBA when I was playing with the Clippers in Summer League. I think this was early 2000, and Dennis Johnson, rest in peace, he was my coach. I played really well against the Seattle Supersonics, and he met with me after the game and told me, he said, listen, you're from the area. I like you. You're tough. You know, you're athletic. You know, you can play this game. You haven't had an opportunity. If I'm here, we're going to sign you. Well, he got fired the next morning in Summer League. So I had a lot of bad breaks along the way, and, you know, there's no blame to be pointed. Like, I gave everything I had to the game. I have no regrets. If I had to do it all over again, I'd do it the same because maybe me making the NBA wouldn't be good for Shea long term. I see a lot of guys that made the league. They're not happy. They may have more money than me right now, but is that success because you got more money? I don't think so. You got to be well-rounded in life. You know, I like the person that I'm becoming, and I love the work that I'm doing today. And, you know, I'm paying it forward, man. And, you know, you want to be blessed, you got to help somebody else.
Shay, in Manchild, you know, your family is featured heavily. You know, you come from a hardworking family. You know, both your parents pushed you to go in the right direction. And, you know, they wanted to just see you succeed. They didn't want, you know, to use you guys as like a meal ticket or anything like that. Do you think just having that foundation and background helped you when things didn't work out basketball-wise and kind of got you over the hump when things weren't going well?
Most certainly. You know, my parents raising me and my brother from humble beginnings and really teaching us the value of work ethic and high integrity and stuff like that, being men of our word, it helps me today, like, balance everything and stay at even keel for the most part. I mean, we grew up in a tough element, man. There was a lot of drugs and gangs that was running rampant in my area, you know, and we saw a lot. And basketball helped us. It became like a sanctuary for me. Like, when I got in between those lines, I felt like nobody could beat me because I worked hard in the summers with my father, me and my brother. We would slave with him, you know, doing construction. And I hated it, but I did it. But I didn't realize what my father was teaching me then, but I do now. And I'm so thankful for that because I'm not an unappreciative type of person. You know, I'm thankful for the little things, and I work extremely hard for what I want. I don't look for people to give me any handouts. You know, I don't mind earning it. And I think there's something to be said for that.
All right. So, you know, we know you're a good dude, like you said. But since you did make the analogy to girls before, and we were talking about Vegas too, I know you're a young cat, you know, getting recruited. We've all seen stuff like He Got Game, and we heard the stuff about, like, you know, the Louisville scandal and all that. So answer this however you want, but did any situations come up with girls as far as recruiting and, you know, visiting colleges and stuff like that? Any crazy stories?
You know, just typical recruiting visits. You know, you get connected with girls at parties and stuff like that. You know, all those things went on. You know, I mean, I've had my fun, man. Like, that would have to be for another interview, fellas.
All right, so but
yeah, at the end of the day, I enjoyed it. It was a great ride. You know, look, I was recruited by everybody: Syracuse, UConn, right, Georgia Tech. You know, I signed with NC State out of prep school. That didn't work. Came back home, Long Beach City College. Signed with Alabama. You know, I've had a lot of experiences. I don't know anybody else. I was recruited like four times. You know, it's unreal.
Yeah, so you got the most out of it, is what you're saying, basically.
For sure, for sure.
All right, one more before we let you go, Shay. You know, Lenny Cook, he obviously came out with his documentary, I believe, 2 years ago, and, you know, he's a guy Slam has covered extensively in the past. Based on the footage, you know, it looks like you guys do some speaking engagements together when you're traveling the country and visiting camps. Did you know Lenny back in the day? And, you know, what's your relationship like with him now? You guys have a similar story, just in the sense that, you know, you're both extremely highly touted and you know, the NBA just didn't work out for either of you guys.
Yeah, I got a chance to spend some time with Lenny at the NBPA Top 100 in Virginia, I think it was two summers back. You know, great guy. I think misunderstood. You know, I don't know his full story, but we spent some time together, and he's got a good spirit, you know, and he's a good guy. And I told him I want to pull him in whenever I can, you know, when we're on our tour doing stuff, we're mentoring, doing speaking engagements when it makes sense, because people need to hear that, you know, from different stories from different people, and he gets a chance to, you know, give his testimony and touch lives as well. You know, he's a little different for me in the sense that he relocated. I think he grew up in New York, and now he's living in Virginia. You know, I made a name for myself in the City of Angels, Los Angeles, where I live, and this is where I rest. I didn't leave. I didn't try to duck. Not that he did. I didn't try to duck or hide from any of the tough questions that I had to face along the way. And I think that's what separates me from a lot of guys. You know, when it got hard and it got lonely and it was dark, I never quit. I kept going. And then my story, Mad Child, the documentary, is going to embody that. People are going to get hit with that. There'll be inspirational piece. It'll be like down times. You may want to cry. You may want to smile. You know, and that's what life is, man. Jimmy D had the best documentary, in my opinion, as far as heartfelt, in the 30 for 30.
Yeah, yeah. And,
I mean, it's just a tearjerker, man. But that those kind of things is what separates good from great. You know, a lot of people have stories, but how does your story move people? So I'm hoping that through this piece, you know, people become better, they become inspired, and they become educated.
Shay, just to wrap up, you know, for anyone that's interested in your story, that's kind of, you know, hoping to look forward to the documentary, when, you know, is there an approximate date on when they'll be able to see it?
That's a $1 million question, man. Believe me. I'm not trying to keep nobody waiting. Right now, we're just focusing on distribution and getting into some of these film festivals that we submitted to. You know, I was a little bit upset that we didn't get into Tribeca in New York City. We just got the information from them, and they said that, you know, they passed or whatnot. So, which is fine. I mean, that kind of stuff happens. But, you know, we've got about 4 others that we submitted to, and we're just waiting to see who's going to pick us up.
It'll get out there for sure.
Yeah, Shay, we just want to thank you for your time and your honesty and just being so open with us. We love the Man Child. We wish you the success. And if we can help you out with anything going forward, just please let us know, man.
Guys, thank you very much.
All right, Shay, man, take care, man. Thanks.
All right.